thank you very much, members. We're going to continue with our deliberations. Just before tea, I think General Rabi was due to speak, so let's give then General Rabi the opportunity. Thank you.
Honourable Chair, thank you. Yes, as General Paslan indicated, I was part of the key witnesses or key people that gave testimony at the Khayelitsha Commission. And basically there are two elements as far as the whole response is concerned. When it comes to the day-to-day activities and the staffing, and the specific actions have been implemented by SAPS in terms of the allocation of resources, in terms of community consultations that needs to take place, etc. And those processes are continuing on a daily basis as far as that specific police station is concerned. And that also includes the deployment of resources when and where necessary based on the specific crime threats and patterns that has been identified in that specific precinct. That's the one element of it. Then there's a second element that talks to the criteria that we apply to allocate resources to police stations. The seven proposals were submitted to the Khayelitsha Commission at the time on how we should calculate and how we should, or what we need to take into consideration to calculate the resources requirements for police stations. That process is still ongoing because we are disputing the methodology that was presented by Professor Redpath as part of, I think he was a representative from the Social Justice Coalition. So we are currently also busy, still busy with that process to go through, because what happened is the total methodology that they presented is based on what happened at Khayelitsha, and it doesn't take into consideration the variables that is applicable to the rest of the country as far as the policing demand is concerned. So yeah, in summary, on the one side, the normal activities, normal policing issues, we are attending to that on a daily basis, but the mathematical calculation of requirements, that process is still in process.
Right, thank you, General Rabi. General Patani, you can continue with the rest of the responses. Thank you.
Thanks, Honourable Chair. The issue raised by Honourable Mulwazi on the firearm amnesty, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members will recall that the former Minister of Police have taken the proposal for the amnesty to Cabinet, which Cabinet subsequently approved. But that process is to be subjected to a parliamentary process. The understanding we have is that it will still be tabled in Parliament, following which the implementation will be kick-started. Initially, it was envisaged that was going to be the 1st of April, but because there is no full compliance with the provision of the law, that implementation would have been deferred, and we will take it upon ourselves, Honourable Chair, to have the new Minister of Police briefed so that that process could be taken back to Parliament to allow. But if you we look at what was envisaged, the amnesty process will either have also benefited the, amongst others, the owners or those who possess firearms whose licenses have also expired, because it will allow them an opportunity to apply afresh for their particular licenses. But I think the details thereof will be deliberated upon when the matter comes back to Parliament.
What about your follow-up? Thank you, gentlemen.
Thanks, Chair. Will the outcome of the court not have a bearing on the amnesty?
Honorable Chair, I can't say at this stage. The argument, the matter was argued, as Honorable Groeneval mentioned, I think last week, on 2 days, and the judgment is reserved. We will, of course, take you from the outcomes of that court process.
Just on the amnesty, just to indicate, I mean, the portfolio committee is in favour of the approach. I think there were some issues raised by the stakeholders about consultation, but I think, the portfolio committee is ready when that comes back to us to deal with the proposal, because remember, it must go to the House. So I think as soon as the briefing to the new minister has been done, I mean, we are ready to deal with it.
Thanks, Honourable Chair. The second issue that Honourable Mulemazi raised was in respect of the renewals, and in a way, I've just dealt with a portion. But remember, in terms of the current legislation, and this is also an issue that Honourable Groeneval have spoken to, we had some discussions on it, including the inconsistencies on our part in as far as the application of the law is concerned. Because the law provides that the license, now we are talking of the card, the renewable license, that renewable license, or you are to tender your application at least 90 days before the expiry. But what we have picked up in practice, and I think honourable members, in particular Honourable Groeneval, who would have had instances where, for example, the license is expiring in a week's time. Person A is allowed to process the application. In another place, person B is told, no, but you can't because of this. And then those are some of the internal challenges that we had to deal with to ensure that there is some consistency. In some instances, a person's license expired yesterday, and that person comes to the DFO, the application is processed. So that makes life very difficult, even for the ordinary citizens, to understand what is actually the law saying. So that calls upon ourselves to do the thorough training and education and enforcement of the law by our own without being inconsistent, because it is opening us up for legal challenges. So what we have done is to direct, especially after we have spoken on the situation in the Western Cape, is to exercise caution when it comes to this sanctioning of operations, simply to say we must go and rent and retrieve those firearms. There are guidelines that are being developed for stations in how those firearms must be dealt with to avoid any confusion. And as the court process, because in terms of that court process, there are a number of issues. One relates to the people, there was a court decision, remember, with regard to the people that have got the license in the green ID book. Those people that never activated the renewal process. Then you have got a second category. It is people who moved away from the green book and applied for the card. Now they haven't renewed the card. And internal challenges were also contributing factors in this regard. Honourable Mulemazi also raised the issue around the rural safety, and the question is that strategy yielding results. And I think Honorable Khunova linked that question also to how many stations are supposed to be implementing the rural safety strategy. The number, I think it's 888 stations that are supposed to be implementing the rural safety strategy. And we will not create an impression that those stations are fully equipped. Like the example that Honorable Hunewald used of the Northern Cape in terms of how many, how the geographical spread of the area that is to be covered by a particular, by one vehicle. The other issue that we will concede to is, are the vehicles deployed in those areas, you know, conducive for the terrain? And it is here where, with the procurement of the vehicles from the 2016-17 financial year, we started kind of dictating to the provinces the type of vehicles that we will want to see going into that those areas, and that will be carried through in this financial year. But as the numbers grow, at least we have an increased budget on the vehicles that we will be looking at the deployment of more in some of the areas. We are not happy with the current situation around the farm attacks, farm murders. While the number of incidents have decreased, we in the 15-16 financial year we had 457 incidents of farm attacks in small holdings, and unfortunately 50 people were murdered during that period. Now we, and this is informed, we had the best quarter. I think February this year we had a number of attacks which made the figure to go up. We had 395 incidents, farm attacks, and so on, which shows the number of incidents went down, but the murders increased from 50 to 64, which we will agree it's an area that must continue to draw our attention. And maybe relating to the comment that Honorable Hunewald made on the TRIO, some of those principles that are in the TRIO plan are going to be employed in this financial year to deal with the incidents of farm attacks, farm murders, to adopt a different approach and bring down those levels. Now, here we only talk attacks. For example, Honorable Hunewald mentioned the 14 cattle which were hacked. It goes also closer to the stock theft, where when we presented our statistics, but also when we did our analysis, the stock theft, just like your trio crimes and so on, continues to be on the increase. So that analysis is helping us in directing our focus to specific areas where we realize, Honorable Chair, that the situation is not normalizing. Honorable Mulemati asked a question about why Nyaupe not mentioned in confiscations. Let me ask General Ngoka, I hope he's here behind me, to just talk to the Nyaupe situation. And I know that it's a burning issue, it's a problem for us, particularly in the townships, in the area where we come from. You have got people talking Bluetooth and so on. It is that Nyaope. But Honorable Chair, if General Ngoka can maybe just talk to the Nyaope situation.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Thank you, General. Nyaope is a combination. It's a combination of all kinds of drugs, and in particular heroin. So when we do analysis and talk to the courts, we need to report what has been listed. For example, heroin is listed. Sometimes they will combine heroin and ARV and Retox. So when we do analysis, we say, look, we did find heroin, and we'd report heroin. So when we do our reporting, we'll tell how many times it was heroin submitted to the lab. Hence, we don't actually capture Nyaope. Because it don't be a true reflection if you say you have received so much Nyaope. We should be saying you have received so much heroin, you have received so much phenacetin. So we are talking about a combination. That is the reason. Thank you so much.
Thank you for the response. Let's go to the other responses.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. Some issues that were raised by Honorable Groenewald, the targets, trio crime targets, said to be reducing. One thing that we know that we are not fully in control of is the reporting. But we will, of course, appreciate where each and every crime that has been committed to be reported. In the main, when we talk about trio crimes, especially when it comes to armed robberies and so on, those get reported to the police. We won't say it is accurate, but I think in the main they get reported. So the setting of the target to reduce them, of course, one ideal will be to say you want to eradicate it completely, but it will be not so smart for us to move from 200 and say we are going to have zero. So while we don't appreciate seeing those kinds of crimes being committed, you will want to realize that downward trend. Like the question Honorable Mulevazi asked about, is the rural safety strategy yielding benefits? We will want to see, having implemented, for example, the plan, that in specific areas we are seeing that downward trend. A province where we have noted good work being done is KwaZulu-Natal. In KwaZulu-Natal, you have more of those heists, gangs being intercepted before they commit. So you realize that even from a crime intelligence gathering perspective, something is working, in that it is known this group is going to be moving to that particular area. The unfortunate thing is that in that process there are some fatalities, Honorable Chair. But the fact that we were able to prevent it from happening, to prevent property or money from being taken by criminals, goes a long way in instilling confidence in the operatives to say something is being done. The fear of commanders, we of course will never tolerate an element of concealment, and commanders should know that what we are to do, the first thing is of course for us to be proactive, Honorable Chair, for crime not to be committed. But where it was committed, let it be reported, let the systems reflect as such, because that picture, that trend which is developing, enables us to make that determination of where the problems are, and it will inform the focus in as far as resources is concerned. Rather than concealing, not reporting, and the impression created is that all is well, while in that particular situation there are some problems. Where, for example, there are inefficiencies when it comes to investigation and so on. Those also must be dealt with. So if there is an element of fear from commanders, of course, if your crime situation is on the increase, we are seeing nothing tangible that has been done, that commander is going to feel the heat. Over the weekend, for example, Chair, I was in and around Tembisa, and I was very much concerned that in a very busy street, you go around street there, you find people gathering, it's taverns, it's shavins and so on. What worried me was that in the 2 hours that I was there, I was not able to see a police vehicle. Now, I'm saying crime may not be committed, but the movement of a police vehicle in that particular area may contribute, because in many of those instances, that's where the raids are coming from, that's where the robberies are coming from. So visibility is very important to try and deal with that. I was happy after talking to the cluster commander. I saw him summoning all station commanders 12 midnight to say, your vehicles are not moving around in this particular area. So we continuously need to be looking at measures, even if that crime is not yet committed. We can't wait for it to be committed. The trend must be saying to you, what is it that contributes towards crime? We, in reporting to the honorable members, said that our observation is that alcohol is the biggest contributor, whether it is in respect of murders, whether it is in respect of robberies and so on, including firearms. So therefore, our operations must be able to speak to those issues. So if there are those members, Honorable Khunevar, that fear to be reprimanded, they are going to be reprimanded, because we can't have a situation where a laissez faire attitude is being adopted while crime is a problem. I think I've spoken to the issue on the consistency of the message, and internally we will do much more work, but I think it also requires of us, especially in the light of these court cases, to go public and just sort of inform the general public our position and expectations in respect of the act, so that there are no contradictory messages. I have spoken to the number of stations that are to implement the rural safety strategy. Honorable Chair, it is correct in the observation that Honorable Groenewald had made in Lichtenberg, Colligny area. We had a problem in that particular area. I think at a point where we had a conversation, it was becoming clear that the numbers in that area are not adequate to deal with the situation, because that situation was mushrooming in the two areas simultaneously. So the crowd management capacity in that area was not coping until we have mobilized from outside the province, and I think we are on the same page in as far as the situation having normalized because of that. It remains a concern, Chair, that you have these situations spiraling out of control, people looting and so on. Already damage is created. But what we did, which unfortunately is ex post facto, we launched an overnight operation where the area was raided, and many of those stolen, whether it's groceries, blankets and everything, were recovered from the people, and I recall 67 people were arrested who were found in possession of those. But ideally, you would want to prevent that kind of a situation. I think I've dealt with Honorable Ramadlakani's question on Owar Tambo in terms of the lapses there. The 20 clusters which were made visible, Honorable Ramadlakani, those are clusters, not stations, which means in a Khayelitsha cluster, there will be a number of police stations. And the stations, I think, range between 8 and 10 currently in a cluster. But in as far as infrastructure is concerned, yesterday we responded to this matter when we were dealing with the Meisenberg 100 million project to say that Khayelitsha Nyanga remains a priority. In actual fact, in as far as Nyanga is concerned, after a long struggle, we have now secured a site for the building of a police station. The similar process is underway in as far as Khayelitsha is concerned. But honorable members may also recall that with the former minister and now former deputy minister, we in those areas have launched what you call the mobiles to try and arrest the situation so that those communities still have access to services pending the establishment of some permanent capacity to be able to deal with them. And as Honorable Chair directed, we will be providing a list of those prioritized projects by the respective provinces. This goes, I think, on General Ravi dealt with the deployment of resources. I recall, was it in December, where the Western Cape got the biggest number of new recruits. If I'm not wrong, it was 1,300 and something that was deployed around those areas. In addition to that, we have now constituted the task teams which are focusing in those particular areas. And like I reported earlier, Honorable Chair, on Friday we are doing the launch of operation, what is it? A crime combating operation. In the Blue Down area, which will have a spillover effect to some of those areas. The issue which also was raised by Honorable Mabija related to the Border Management Agency, I do know that an impression was created that as a police we are not either cooperative or going to play a part in the border management agency, which is not the case. All what we are saying is that the Constitution provides for the South African Police Service, and it is very clear on who must do the function of policing. So it's not a function that is outsourced elsewhere. It's a policing function. So we are saying, even if you have got a border, BMA border management agency operational, let's say in Beitbridge, and there is someone who is saying, I was robbed, that case is not going to be reported to a border management agency somewhere. It's going to be reported to the police because we are the only ones that are mandated to investigate crime, except, you know, your IP tool investigate police-related crimes. But in general, every crime will be reported to the police and it will be investigated by the police. So it is there where we were making it very clear that we are not going to hand over the police stations to a border management agency. The police stations are going to remain with the South African Police Service. We, the law provides that we can operate within the 10 kilometer radius from a border. So the establishment of the border management agency is not going to change the law in that when we are chasing a suspect, that suspect gets into the 10-kilometer radius and we say it's now a border, a BMA responsibility, we are retreating, and call someone and say, BMA, can you please arrest that person for us? No, we are going to go with that person into that BMA area and beyond as long as we are within the 10-kilometer area. So, Honorable Chair, we will continue to play our part whether the BMA is established or not. And this is not a contradiction to existing legislation and positions that government has taken in this regard. And I think there is some clarity. There are some functions which we may have been performing there which are not necessarily police. For example, you are not going to have a situation, we were talking earlier about OR Tambo, international key point. Now, we are not going to relinquish our responsibility in as far as a national key point is concerned just because we have got a BMA. Intelligence gathering, that function is not going to be left to someone else. We are going to continue to be performing the function. So simply put, we will work within the confines of the law. We will cooperate with the structure, but we are not going to be giving away any of our legislated mandates in this regard. And I think we have found each other during our engagement at that level. The harness APHIS issue, Honorable Chair, is just for the benefit of Honorable Ramatlakane. We dealt with it yesterday to say that work has been done, there is a process by the Department of Home Affairs to secure a new system which we are party to finalize this integration. So there is commendable work which is done in that regard. I know General Shezi said, can we close this matter? So may I allow you to close the chair in providing some information on that.
Thank you, General. Yes, within the Border Post System, Chair, there is an inquiry system from also the intelligence point of view, which links directly to the movement control system of Home Affairs, where incoming or outgoing personnel can be verified in cases of wanted persons, missing persons, and so forth. So we do have systems in place to can verify the movements around the border post. And we also currently have the field terminal devices that are used. In the new plan, which you have, part of what you are presenting in this financial year, is to procure additional devices to be able to check within the border posts, on border posts, that movement. You know, then it will be a direct link from the APHIS to the handling system of Home Affairs, so that you can be able to detect the movement correctly. APHIS is integrated with HANIS through the project of IJS. It is a completed project. We are having a point-to-point link from the APHIS side of police with the HANIS of Department of Home Affairs. That integration process has been concluded. So we can access the HANIS database from our own APHIS scan. So in instances from the borders, where we have already deployed the cell terminal devices. From our LFC connections, we can connect to the wireless environment and actually identify the person in charge there. The only thing we will do in the new financial year is to deploy additional resources in terms of those terminal devices to be able to control, to be able to enhance the services that are provided within our border police. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks, Honourable Chair. Just last question, Honourable Ramatlakane raised on the white paper. There is alignment with the provisions of the white paper. It has been taken into consideration and it remains a work in progress. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. Members, I want to move to Detective Services, but I will allow another round of these other urgent questions. Just two from my side. The one is the question of the police reservists. I don't see anything in your documents. I mean, there was this big campaign last year in terms of advertising. The few stations I visited, one station I got, there's one or two left. It's like a dying breed. So I just want to get an indication in terms of the rolling out of the new reservist system. How many do we've got today in South Africa available to supplement the SAPs? And towards the end of the financial year, how many do you see going to join us? I just want to get a status report on that because it's critical. I get a lot of inquiries also from voters, and they want to ask, can I join as a reservist? What is the criteria? We know it's now stricter, and employment and so on, but if we can just get a status on that. Then the issue of alignment again of the MTSF with your own APP. I picked up in the APP you say that at the end of 1920, you envisage in the POPS environment 8820, while in the MTSF it's indicated as 9,500. So there is a discrepancy. I just want to know what is the reason for that. And linked to that, in terms of Parliament again, SAPS indicated there will be the re-establishment of 15 dormant units and the establishment of 8 new units. I just want to know, as of today, how many of those 15 dormant units have been re-established, and of the 8 new units, how many of that 8 new units is now operational? Honourable Molobasi.
Thank you, Chairperson. Do you perform lifestyle audit at all levels where there is a sufficient? I know for a fact that in the previous parliament, when we visited a police station somewhere in Victoria, we found that a surgeon could afford 4 expensive cars in 2 weeks. My second question goes to how far are you with the issue of the deputy station commanders? Is it being implemented, or where are we? My last one is on your 10111. As said by SAPU yesterday, it is an essential service, but the staff that is accommodated there, they do go on strike. Is it normal? Thank you.
Thank you. Almamula.
Thank you, Chairperson. I've got only one question. I want to know that are all your vehicles at station 11 installed AVS? Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Groenewald.
Thank you, Chair. My question is also on the reservists. I received a couple of complaints. And firstly, the question is, why do they have to complete psychometric tests now? Because the argument is that some of them have been really for more than 10 years been a reservist, and now suddenly they have to do a psychometric test. And we had a specific situation in Western Cape where the provincial reservist coordinator, Captain Creel, when he addressed the reservists, already reservists, in the test session, he made some remarks that was really not acceptable. For instance, he said that they pass or fail the test. All those who do not pass the test must bring back all their equipment. Now, firstly, a psychometric test cannot fail or pass you. it's what it is, it's a psychometric testing of personality to see whether you've got a certain personality suitable. And a couple of them felt very uneasy about the fact and very unhappy, and his words was actually, I hope all reservists fail, as that would make my life easier. Now, Chairperson, what is the attitude? Do we want reservists? Or do we say, no, we don't really need you? I don't know, we need them. So I want to know from the Commissioner, what is the real essence of the psychometric test? In certain sense, I understand, but how was it communicated to the reservists? And how do we communicate to the reservists the need of them for the police services? Thank you.
No, thank you, Chair. No, Chair, what, I'll ask two questions only. I would like to know, Commissioner, as to what has been done, particularly with, for example, if you recall, in KZN, you identified X number of police stations that were problematic, or that were challenged, if I may put it like that, Mlazi, etc., Phoenix, and others. If maybe one can get a status report as to what is the up-to-date kind of a status of those stations now, are they stabilizing or what? In terms of them respond, and what is their response to the national program. Two is the question of a bit of a concern, Chair. You know, yesterday I was just watching some news. I think it was a special assignment there. Yeah. This thing of execution in style of one of the community member in Gauteng, where Johannesburg Metro police are involved, whether then Metro police or municipal police, those that are just not necessarily doing or enforcing traffic laws, but doing crime prevention. Do they do it alone, or they need to be involved with the operations of SAPS members? Because you were quite correct that whatever a thing that happens, it will end up in your desk as men and women in blue. And that's a very, very correct observation. Now, that situation was very, very, very haunting, Chairperson, I must be very honest. Because now the head of that Joburg, Johannesburg Metro, seems to be playing nothing but a defensive role. When a person, a community member, has been hacked to death by police and shot multiple times in the head, and that is just lying around within the media, and that is, I don't really think that is correct, really. Thanks.
Honourable Member, Honourable Ramadhani.
No, thank you, Honourable Chair. Yes, it's a follow-up to my earlier question. Commissioner, the issue about your explanation around the border management issue, I think, is understandable. I don't think there's any way of subcontracting the job of SAPS to any other body. But the question I wanted to ask you is the follow-up one. Why in the cluster launch that you are mentioning Bluda, why must it be Luda, when you started as a college. I'm struggling just to find the logic of having to go and launch in Blue Run when on the other side you have Khayelitsha where you actually have a concern. The second follow-up question is in relation to OR Tambo. And I did get your explanation. The question that, you know, I was asking the commissioner, maybe I put it in the wrong way. What the question I'm asking is that besides the police, at least the police can still do something, but you have syndicates running from the airport. You have criminal syndicates running as a workers that works at the airport. The question I was asking, in the 40,000 people that works perhaps at OR Tambo, what do you know who works there? The answer will say, no, you don't know who works there. But shouldn't be a way to say, basically there must be a degree of knowing who works there, knowing in a sense that some, even if it's a low level kind of checking in terms of who works there. I mean, even if you were talking about the computer syndicate, people who are stealing, it comes from the airport staff members. So the question I'm asking, because I don't know what must be done, in your understanding and what must be done, because you're going to deal with the crisis all the time because of the type of people that are there. Some are subcontractors that have come today and tomorrow they go on. What is it that must be done in order to neutralize that, to try and at least have some kind of a safety valve that is coming out of it? The last one, Chair, is the Bravo Charlie complaint. You know, the whole thing about the indicator there has been subjected to lots of discussion, the AG discussion around it. And also there is always this unhappiness, this slowness, the satisfaction around the issues. Question is really, and I know, as I can remember, there's been lots and lots of work, happening. The time that it takes before, in between the complaint and the arrival, the introduction of the cell phone, the introduction of the operation center, the introduction of monitoring of vehicles and closures. But what must be done to address that particular aspect? It seems to be a moving target all the time. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Raptakan, Honourable Bija.
Equal, Chairperson.
Ramula, you indicate if you want another option.
Thank you, Chairperson. Commissioner, I want to ask you a critical question. Do you have any plans of employing reservists? Because in other stations, police are not working. It's the reservists that are working more than the police. And other reservists, they work at a station for more than 10 years, 15 years. But nothing that is happening. What are your plans? Thank you, Chair.
Members, that's now the final questions on visible. Any other questions? So that's the final round on that. General, we can go with the responses. Thank you.
Thanks, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. Maybe we've, in response to the question by Honourable Ramatlakane on ORT, I'm approaching this question with caution because we are not on our own, and certainly the people you'll want to deal with there need not get the message before we do what we are supposed to be doing. I am satisfied, Honourable Chair, with the level of engagement and the participation, for example, of AXA and the stakeholders at the airport in dealing with the situation. It's a little bit complex. And the Honourable Chair will also have noted that even in response to the unfortunate crime that was committed there, It is not only SAPS members that are being arrested. We also have AXA people being arrested. We have people from the airlines that get arrested, which must tell us that there is a bigger problem that is being dealt with there. But, Chair, with your permission, I would want to refrain from providing any further details on that particular matter. We did have a closed-door session with the Joint Standing Committee where we were able to drill down into the crux of the issues, and we continue to engage on that one. Let me deal quickly with the one on the reservist. I think it was raised by Honourable Groenewald and Honourable Mola and Honourable Chair. We have on the system 13,960 reservists countrywide. Active ones, when we talk about active chair, it is those that do duty, because some people will have enlisted their services as reservists, but for one or other reason, they do not fulfill their obligations in tendering their services on a monthly basis, because they have an obligation to give us an X number of hours. As management, we have placed this matter on our agenda, beginning to ask ourselves a question. Are the number of hours that are currently provided for making a business sense? Because I think they are to be given 16 hours on a monthly basis. Now, that 16 hours was the determination made long ago when we were still doing the 8-hour shifts. So they will at least have given us two shifts. Now we have moved from the 8-hour shifts. We are across the board implementing the 12-hour shift a day. So we are looking at the realignment and reviewing that, which we will finalize for implementation in this year. In as far as I do have a breakdown per province of how many were provided for in the advert. We remember, Honourable Chen, the last time I was here, I did say that we have relaxed the criteria to accommodate those that would ordinarily have been excluded. The total number of posts that we had advertised was 2,610, and 6,308 applications were received. The question that relates to that raised by Honourable Groenewald, of the 6,303 of those new applicants were subjected to psychometric testing. 2,196 of them were successful. Successful will mean, because the psychometric test has got some areas that it covers, and there are certain critical areas that all of us must satisfy to suggest that we are stable in all respects, and that we are not going to get into the system and there are few bearings that are loose and we do something irresponsible, then we blame the organization. So I think that is part of the testing. So 2,196 of them met the requirement, and 1,823 were subjected to an interviewing process. So that is how the figures are moving. At this stage, Chair, those, now I'm not talking new applicants, those that have went through the entire process that have already been confirmed is 542, and that process continues to have those filled. I am concerned with what Honourable Groenewald raised of Captain Green. We'll get closer to obtain some details so that we can deal with this, because this psychometric testing is not applicable to those that have already been enlisted. This applies to those that are coming in new in the system. So I'll just want to familiarize myself with the facts so that we can deal with that particular matter. So maybe the related question by Honorable Muller, I suggest taking care of here. What we don't do, which is unfortunately what many people try to do, they try to use the reservist system as a backdoor into the police. People that come in as a reservist are volunteering their services, and they have been taken on board in that spirit. That is a voluntary service. It's not some kind of a commitment to say we are going to be employing you on a permanent basis. So many issues that we have will be people who will come in and they start saying, but I've been serving for 10 years, for so many years, and the police are not employing me on a permanent basis. The person must still meet the requirement to be employed on a permanent basis. It does, of course, serve as an advantage, because when the person is in that system, gets to understand the functioning of the organization, becomes better equipped, and they will apply for posts like any other person if permanent posts are being advertised and they are employed.
Just a follow-up. I mean, you asked about business sense. Now, it works out more or less of one reservist per station in South Africa, if you look at the raw figures. I mean, don't we need more reservists to supplement, the service? I just want to get a sense with regard to that.
Honorable Chair, you need more. And that is why we would have made provision for a number, 2,600. So we are supposed to be growing. And we come from a very huge number. At some point when I was still the Divisional Commissioner of Personnel, on our system we had close to 50,000 reservists, but many of them were not active. And this is where our problem was when you start dealing with bogus police and so on, because they were all out there with uniforms, with appointment certificates, and the fact that they are not active, you need to continue to be monitoring them. So definitely we need more, and we'll continue with the drives of recruiting more people and advertising. May I ask General Shejit to deal with the AVL issue, the installation?
General, sorry, Anuma Bija, is there a follow-up?
Chairperson, I just want to make up a follow-up rather than a top-up thing on that issue of reservist, coupling it with CPF people. There's an outcry that the police station staff, they do not do their work in the community. CPF and those reservists are the people who are working, and the police station staff behave like bosses to them doing the dirty job, and that demoralize them from doing their job. Can you just try to attend to that one? Because it is true, those complaints are generally heard on the grassroots level. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. There is some validity in what Honorable Mabija is raising, and I'll give an example. When I was a young constable some time ago, I worked at a station where, especially the end of the month weekend, from 10, we were doing 8-hour shifts, from 10 the evening on Friday to 10 the evening on Sunday, the station was manned by reservists. So they were doing duty. It will be maybe one or two of us on the shift that are working with the reservists. And they were giving their all. Not that I was not a good constable. I was a good one. They were doing their all, you know, arrest and so on. And I think reservists continue to do good work. Especially those that did not come in with an ulterior motive. In actual fact, when you talk to them, they will say, we are much more effective than that one who is being paid to do work. But where such comes to our attention, those situations are being dealt with because they are not supposed to be objects that you are using. And not playing our part as an organization, because as we say, we can't outsource the policing function. CPFs are to do their role. Their mandate is very clear. They cannot replace the reservists, for example. Reservists have got a function. The police have got a function. So, Chair, it's a matter that will continue to enjoy our attention where there is prevalence of such. May I ask General Shezi?
Thank you, Chairperson. The question from Honorable Muller was whether all the vehicles in these police stations are fitted with the AVL. Not all the vehicles are fitted with AVL, Chairperson, particularly the vehicles that were delivered last calendar year and this year. Because we are in the process to set up a new contract for AVL. That is the hindrance of implementing the new vehicles with the AVL. The old vehicles, while the contract was in existence, all of them are fitted with AVL. What happens in the instance is when the vehicle breaks down, which had an AVL, we will then deinstall in the old one to install in the new vehicle, just so that we continue to have all vehicles fitted. But as soon as the contract is finalized of the AVL, we will ensure that we catch up on the backlog of fitting the AVL to the police station. This contract is one of those that is taking, it's about 18 months now that it hasn't been finalized, but we hope to have it finalized in this financial year. And then once it's finalized, then all vehicles will be fitted accordingly. And it is with CETA, Chairperson, it is one of those that are managed from the CETA contract. It's currently at adjudication level. We hope that it will be finalized pretty soon, but it is one of the contracts that are managed from the CETA side. Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. If I may conclude the few ones. The one by Honorable Mfongo on the KZN stations, Honorable Chair, there is a commendable improvement in as far as the performance of stations in KwaZulu-Natal is concerned. And we continue tracking performance of those stations that we have made visible as stations with some challenges. At some point, we will be able to provide details, but we are satisfied with the progress that is being made. In respect of the matter execution and the metro, I'll just maybe approach Honorable Mfongo for some details so that I look into that specific incident. I'm not 100% aware of that detail. And to Honorable Ramakakani, the Blue Downs launch is informed by the fact that Blue Downs is one of those added clusters, and already there are interventions in Khayelitsha by the provincial commissioners. So the OCC approach is an approach that we initiated now. So in the Western Cape, we thought, let's for now give the operations that are underway a chance in Khayelitsha and the identified clusters, and use the OCC approach in the Blue Downs area, which will then be rolled out to the other clusters. So it is not for any other reason that we are not going there. It's also because we all are here, and we will do the operations ourselves on Friday. I think I've dealt with the ORT matter. There were some issues that were raised by Honorable Mulevanzi. The first one on the 10-1-1 centers, particularly the mid-rent 10-1-1 center is giving us some challenges, Chair. There we have deployed in the past people employed in terms of the Public Service Act who have been raising issues wanting to be elevated. They were moved from level 3 to level 5 during the time of General Pierre, and they wanted to be moved to level 7, and we are at that point where we say, because of the essential nature of services that are rendered there, we must move towards employing or deploying people employed in terms of the Police Act, so that we are not confronted with the challenge of people either picketing and so on, because as the police we are prohibited from doing so. The deputy station commanders, Honorable Chair, we are not implementing it at this stage. We have reported to the Honorable Member that because of the hostility measures, we have opted not to implement the deputy station commander, but rather the deputy cluster commander to be able to enforce command and control. The other issue, lifestyle audits. Normally the declaration of interest are focused on senior management, but when it comes to lifestyle audit, when irrespective of the level, when there is a suspicious behavior, we all, irrespective of the level, will be subjected to a lifestyle audit as part of the investigation process. Honorable Chair raised two questions. The one was in respect of the dormant units. And maybe I can ask General Skete and General Nkwanazi to respond to it. And the issue of numbers, the alignment. Yeah. No, the I think in page, what is it, page 11 of the APP, it is expressed, but I'm first going to allow General Skete and General Konazi to talk to it. And maybe just one last thing on the reservist, Honorable Chair. Apart from the hours that are compulsory, that the reservist must are obliged to offer, we also do call-up. In other words, over and above their compulsory hours, if they do duty beyond that, we have called them up. We do pay, an allowance for their duties, hourly allowance, and on an annual basis, we provide for something like 20 million for such, especially during our peak periods, like festive season, Easter, and so on, when there is a high demand on our resources. We then call them up and we pay them for those hours that they will have worked. Chair, I'll General Konazi, your General Skete, to give you the government units.
Thank you, Chair. I will just take those part of the question that has been asked. Chair, what is actually important is that the question you have asked is that in line with the enhancement of the public order policy. So I think if you check to the roll-out strategy for public order policing in page 11 as well, is that we need to enhancing of existing POP units is a re-establishment of previous existing POP units, and the last one is the establishing of new POP units. So what is the position is that when the document was approved, we were having a problem with the funding that we could not kick off as quick as possible. But with the 2017-2018, that's where everything now is moving forward. A decision was taken that we will start first with the enhancing of the existing POP units that are there, making sure that with the equipment they are equipped, vehicle-wise they are equipped, as the first question was asked, to say when vehicles are made available, and the acting National Commissioner indicated that 119 has been procured. So that is part of the enhancing of the existing units. But with the re-establishment, if we check on the second page that talked to 17 to 18 year one, it's where we have received 580 new recruits presently are in training. With those new recruits, we have allocated to four provinces, that is Western Cape, KZN, as well as Mpumalanga. They will re-establish units out of those members that are allocated. That means 85, 86, 86 in those three provinces, with the purpose of reinforcing other provinces if there are problems, even within the province as well. But at the same time, each province is going to receive members on that. Our plan will be the last one to look now to the re-establishing the dormant, which is the units that were closed before, to get those units to be re-established, looking maybe to 2018, 2019. But at the moment, this is what we are seeing on it now. We are pleased with it. Even though with Northern Cape already one unit has been re-established, that is Kuruma is in place as we speak. Thank you, Chair.
The other 14 dormant ones will only happen post 2019. Yeah,
that's correct.
Yeah.
Thank you, sir. The whole establishment or re-establishment of the POPs units to their previous staffing and capacity levels, you will remember when it was 2008-09 strengthening of the stations. People went from POPs units to stations as sort of designated individuals and dissolved invisible. Be that as it may, in recent years, because of various external circumstances and even risks, in terms of your protests and so forth, the decision was taken, as you fully know. In the past two NTF cycles, we have submitted, under the auspices of the accounting officer, we have submitted, based on inputs from POPs, certain requirements in terms of personnel and equipment. What happened is because of the compensation level that's basically fixed in government, we could not get obtained money to increase to that initial level of 8,000 plus the staffing levels. But what in the meantime we did is, because of our natural attrition of approximately 6,000, 5,500 people per annum, we take in new recruits, and some of these new recruits to a large extent then goes to POPs. So it's indirectly a reprioritization exercise in order to staff POPs. We will endeavor in time to come and make out the business case in the next NTF cycle, which already begin now in June, that we can try and obtain also personnel. What we did obtain, if you look at the personnel side and you look at the equipment side, we did obtain after I suppose, successful negotiations with the Treasury, we obtain the funding that the TRES, as Chairman Mkhwanazi referred to, and which Chairman Paslani referred to, on the equipment side, Nayala's vehicles, body armor, and what have you. So I think we can say, Chairman Mkhwanazi, we feel reasonably adequate on the non-personnel side, in terms of our equipment and so forth. In terms of the personnel, I think we will again endeavor in this new MTF to obtain additional personnel. I think that is a definite answer that we can provide to you, members of the committee and chairperson. Thank you.
Maybe Chair's direct question, why the no correlation between the MTSF and the 8.820, which is in the plan. Chair, this is primarily informed by the figures that we thought we were going to afford in this year, taking into consideration the hostility measures. Remember, we yesterday communicated that we now have done some recalculations that will allow us to go up to 195, which may allow us to do a little bit of a top-up in the POP environment. But that's the explanation why you will find the discrepancies between that MTSF number and the one which is sitting in the APP.
Like a comment here. Members, just would like to indicate to you, when we prepare the MTF, as you fully know, we do it basically August, September of a financial year. We get a provisional allocation in October, and then we provide the database. If you get 6 months later, you have more relevant information regarding your losses that you had, because it's difficult sometimes to estimate how many people will leave the service in what month, and losses need to be replaced. So that is the first aspect, and secondly, then you also have a better understanding of what compensation items have been concluded and what still needs to be concluded. So we do approximately 3, even 4 very, very intense costing from zero exercises on the compensation budget, taking into account allowances, taking into account medical, pension benefits and everything, as well as the different people on different salary levels and what it cost us. So that is why we were able to afford probably more now, and not the 193 something, but the 195. Again, normally here, October, we do another costing in order to see what it is. We also have certain aspects that impact them on the estimates, in the sense that we don't know what will be negotiated in the Public Service Bargaining Council. We get an indication, we provide for it, but if it is higher, 1 or 2% higher, in the case of SAPS, it's hundreds of millions. So we have to stay on top of our costing the whole time, and that is why we've now costed, and we've, after huge deliberations, we've decided 195, which increased that amount. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks, Honourable Chair.
All taken care. Let's go now to Detective Services until 1 o'clock. We'll try and see if we can't put in some questions before that time, but General Ravi will, maybe he can move. And then we'll have a lunch break of 1 hour, and then we'll reconvene at 2. Continue, but let's go then for Detective Services. Thank you, General Ravi.
Honourable Chair, members, thank you. Starting our program 3, Detective Service, the program itself consists of 3 sub-programs. You have Crime Investigation, the Criminal Record Center, and the Forensic Science Laboratory. And there is a fourth one included there, the Special Investigations, that includes DPCI, but we agreed that we will deal with that separately tomorrow. The service detective service expenditure estimates, as indicated on the table there, in the 2016-17 financial year, it amounted to a total of 16.7 billion, of which 11.1 billion was in crime investigations. The Criminal Record Center was 2.2 billion, forensic science 1.8 billion, and the specialized investigations 1.4 billion. There's an increase in total, looking at the total program, from 16.7 billion to 17.9 billion. Crime investigation goes up to 11.9 billion. Criminal Records Center goes to 2.4 billion. Forensic science to 1.9 billion. And specialized investigations, 1.5 billion. The purpose of the program is to enable the investigative work of SAPS, including providing support to investigators in terms of forensic evidence and the Criminal Records Center. The crime investigation sub-program includes crime detection with a budget of 9.4 billion, vehicle theft with a budget of 488 million, stock theft units with a budget of 533 million, family violence and child protection units with a budget of 947 million. There's a continued focus on forensic services, also taking into account the new legislation. Also included is the CJS revamp initiatives. The operational portion, we will also strongly promote further capacity enhancement at Forensic and Criminal Records Center. The amount involved is 671 million, training and general detective capacity 106 million, and IT 876 million. Specialized investigations, the DPCI, there has been a significant resourcing of DPCI, particularly from 2012-2013. Effective from 2016-17, the National Treasury has allocated this section to the budget specifically and exclusively for this purpose. A quick glance at the overall performance of the program at the end of the third quarter. The total objectives indicated that we achieved in total to 23 and 11 not achieved. The specific indicators where we experience problems is, first of all, the detection rate associated with all the categories of crime that we monitor. Basically, none of the detection rate categories did we achieve the targets that has been set. Also, as far as the within the DPCI environment, 43% of registered organized crime projects to be successfully terminated, we were only standing at 22.58%. The 30 serious corruption-related trial case dockets, this is also within DPCI where officials are involved. We were only standing at 24. And then two within the forensic science, 93% of routine case exhibits to be processed within 28 working days. At the time, we were only standing at 78.31%. And then 76% of non-routine case exhibits entries processed within 75 working days. At the time, we were standing at 75.74%. I would say, going into the detailed indicators, first of all, the strategic objective that basically remains the same throughout the program is to contribute to the successful prosecution of offenders by investigating, gathering, and analyzing evidence. As far as the first objective statement is concerned, focusing on the effective investigation of serious crime, we retain two critical indicators. The one talks to the detection rate for serious for crime, the categories of crime, and the second one talks to the conviction rate for serious crime. Now, as indicated, in terms of the so-called problematic indicators, the detection rate is a problematic category as we were not achieving our targets as set in the previous APP. So conviction rate, detection rate for serious crime set at 37%, the conviction rate for serious crime set at 88%. Detection rate for contact crime 55%, the conviction rate at 81%. These two primary indicators are repeated for all the different subcategories of crime, and the management took a decision that these are the two critical indicators that we need to monitor because it relates directly to the vision and the objectives or mandate of the South African Police Service to ensure that criminals are brought to justice, first of all through the detection rate that refers to us the percentage of cases that are regarded as detected and also the percentage referred to court, and then your ultimate success rate in terms of the conviction rate that we achieve. We also have the conviction rate for crimes committed against women. We have the detection rate for crimes against women. The conviction rate is set at 83%. Detection rate for crimes against children is set at 70%. In this instance, it's just important to measure that we continue to measure only the five contact crimes as stipulated as far as crimes against women and children are concerned. That is including murder, attempted murder, sexual offenses, common assault, and assault GBH. The conviction rate for crimes against children has been set at 78%. Honourable Chair and members, then we've applied the same principle as that we did at Visible Policing Programme 2, where we now monitor the detection rate and the conviction rate for all the subcategories of crime. Now, the detection rate for contact-related crime, this is a new indicator and it's been set at 47.1%. The conviction rate for contact-related crime at 87%. The detection rate for property-related crime set at 14%. And the conviction rate for property-related crime set at 88%. Though these performance indicators were included as they depict a breakdown of serious crime, thereby allowing for the tracking of performance against the specific crime categories. And a very good example, say, is, for instance, where you have significant differences between the different crime categories. You will, for instance, find that the detection rate for property crime overall is significantly lower than the other categories, and that requires specific types of interventions as far as the investigation process is concerned. So that is why it's also important for us as SAPS to monitor these subcategories more effectively. As far as the detection rate for serious crime, we are standing at 36%, or the target has been set at 36%. The conviction rate for serious crime is set at 88%. Then the performance indicators were included. It's for the same argument. They allow us to follow the progress that we are making as far as the individual categories and the subcategories are concerned. Our detection rate for crimes dependent on police action, 99%, and the conviction rate is set at 98%. The next objective statement talks to the crime, the Criminal Record Center. The objective statement associated with the sub-program, first of all, is to improve the processing of fingerprint searches and the maintenance of criminal records. That has been amended in the previous plan. It only referred to the improving the procedure for updating of records of offenders. We've now revised the performance the objective statement as indicated on the slide. The first performance indicator is the percentage of original previous conviction reports generated. The target has said that 95% of the previous conviction reports needs to or must be generated within 15 calendar days. Then we've added two new indicators in this environment. The first the first one talks to the percentage of result of trial updated in respect of the following, the guilty verdicts, where we want to see 95% updated within 20 calendar days and the not guilty verdicts to be updated, or 95% to be updated within 20 calendar days. So those are the two new indicators that we've added as far as this specific sub-program is concerned that talks to you the updating of your criminal records. These performance indicators were included to improve the conviction rate and address the critical area of underperformance and to keep proper records of the offender's data. Enhancing the process of forensic evidence case exhibits, the first indicator, or maybe I need to explain the statement, the amendment that we made to the objective statement. Sorry, it previously included processing of forensic evidence. We have now changed it to enhance the processing of forensic evidence case exhibits. And the performance indicator, the first one is the percentage of routine case exhibits finalized, and the target that we set is that 75% of these exhibits to be processed within 28 working days. As far as the percentage of non-routine case exhibits are concerned, a target is set of 70% exhibits processed within 75 working days. And the percentage reduction in case exhibits exceeding the prescribed time frame, the target has been set that our backlog should not exceed 10% of the case exhibits that has been received. Next objective statement associated with the sub-program is enhance the processing of forensic intelligence case exhibits focusing on DNA and IBIS, the Integrated Ballistic Identification System. First indicator is the percentage of ballistics intelligence case exhibits finalized. Our target has been set at 95% of the IBIS intelligence case exhibits to be finalized within 28 working days. Percentage of DNA intelligence case exhibits finalized, target is set at 70% of the case exhibits to be processed within 63 working days. The performance indicators that we removed, Honourable Chair members, that although they are, there's a number, total number of five listed, and the six is a different one. The first five talks to the trial-ready case dockets. A decision was taken that we continue to monitor the trial ready case dockets, the actual figures within the annual operational plan of the division at that specific business unit level, and that we indicate that we include the two critical indicators that relates to the investigation process in the APP. The first one, the detection rate, and the second one that talks to the conviction rate. We will, however, as we indicated, continue to monitor it at that respective level, and we can also then include that information in our narratives for reporting purposes. And then the sixth one that we currently have a problem with is the detection, conviction, and trial ready case dockets for criminal conduct in public protest. When we initially developed the APP, we only included the detection, conviction, and trial ready case dockets for public violence. But the intention of the indicator, as it was initially indicated, was to monitor all criminal conduct that is committed during public protest. Now, unfortunately, Honourable Chair, our systems at the moment is not geared to give us the total information. It can only give us the data as far as public violence is concerned. So we are currently busy and initiating the system development so that we are able to identify all incidents of criminal conduct during public violence and public protest. That is, we've included this in the indicator of the respective division, and it's currently being tested with the intention, once it's tested and properly validated, that we will include it in the annual performance plan of the next financial year. The updates to the strategic plan relates to the changes that I've already referred to, the detection rate, the MPSF target for serious crime at 38%. I've referred to the fact that the main reason why it's currently stated at 38% is the fact that we are not achieving our targets in terms of the MPSF and the detection rate for the serious crime categories. Conviction rate has been increased from 87.56 to 89%, and the aim of this objective is to improve the overall detection, trial and case docket rate, thereby contributing towards the successful prosecution and enhanced confidence in the criminal justice system, and the links is to the successful detection and completion of investigations contribute to the successful prosecution, thereby displaying optimal performance of the criminal justice system. The fingerprints, improving the processing of fingerprint searches and maintenance of criminal records at 92%. That was in the initial baseline 2013-14. It was indicated at 92%. It's now standing at 95% of the original previous conviction reports to be generated within 12 calendar days. We also note that it's down managed or set lower than the initial 15 calendar days. The objective provides for scientific evidence which strengthens the case by supporting investigation and prosecution processes. It links to the enhancement of the CJS value chain and the implementation of the DNA Act as stipulated. The forensic evidence case exhibits new performance indicator, the backlog was not initially indicated, the backlog not exceeding 10% of the exhibits that we've received over that specific period, and then also 95% as far as the DNA and the IBIS, processing of those intelligence case exhibits are concerned. The MPS target standing at 95% of ballistic intelligence case exhibits finalized within 28 working days, and the objective is once again to provide for scientific evidence which strengthens the case by supporting the investigation and prosecuting processes. And it also links to the enhancement of the CJS value chain and the implementation of the DNA Act. And then also that is linked to that same objective statement, and the 80% of DNA intelligence cases to be exhibits to be processed within 28 working days with the same justification and links. Honourable Chair, that concludes our presentation on Program 3. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. Members, we will now go until lunchtime, and then we get responses. I'll go with the first in a few months. The issue of detection rate for serious crime, now, this has been reduced from 38% in 2016-17 to 37% in 2017-18. Now, this has been an area of underperformance for the department for a long time, and I mean, detection rate is critical, especially in serious crime. So, the lowering of the target again, what is the reason for that? If we can just get that
the MTSF outcome 3 target for detection rate of serious crimes is to increase to 56% by 2014-15 and maintain it at that level thereafter. Now the SAPS target will only increase to 38% in 2019-20, which is well below the MTSF target for of 56%. So again, the MTSF target will not be reached. Are we going to address that issue? I just want to get an indication. Right, let's go to the other members.
Thank you, Chairperson. I only have one question on the effective investigation of serious crimes. This Sashambure man who is in court charged with a murder conspiracy, that we knew that that was the charge. Now suddenly yesterday it was changed to something lighter, I think, and I don't understand how it came about. Now my question is this because of poor investigation or what brings this about? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Mula.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for your presentation. But I have got a problem, Chairperson, here because other slides we don't have. Why the department only they send us the presentation, other slides we don't have, we must see it on the screen. I'm not happy about the Chairperson. In slide 55, will you please indicate the reason for the removal of this performance indicator? The following is a percentage of trial-ready cases. My second question, target on detection rate for property-related crimes is 14%. Why so low? My third question, in slide 52, what do you mean backlog not exceeding 10%? Of case exhibits received. What happens if it exceeds 10%? In slide 45, give reasons why they were terminated. They were terminated in slide 45. The other thing, Chairperson, on the fingerprint. In extension level, we have a problem with the people who are working with fingerprints because the community reports the case. They will wait for 2 days or 3 days for the people who are working with fingerprints. Can you please go and see what are you going to do with them or deploy other people because or take the people to the training? We can't have a person who will come after 2 days or 3 days. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honourable Lubo.
Thank you, Chair. I struggle with one definition. Can I get the definition of detection rate again, please? Because the way I understand a detection rate, that there was a crime reported, there's a file, it's given to a detective, and if the detective makes contact with the accused, is that a detection? How do we understand a detection rate? Because, Jefferson, if we talk about targets of in the 30%, I mean, we have more than, about 1.7 to 1.8 million reported crimes. So that creates a huge problem. So I'd like to know the definition used by the department as far as the detection rate is concerned. Then, Jefferson, my second question is, I'm a bit confused. There must be a mistake or I'm misunderstanding. On our slide number 33 of yesterday, the staff establishment of the get the figure of how many detectives do we have now. I ask it every year in the department. My third and last question is then, Chairperson, I presume that I will get the explanation of the fingerprints now that I've asked yesterday on the practical way it has been done in the department. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. I will... Klungu?
On slide 45, I wonder if I can be clarified on that what is 43% of which is that organized crime project successfully terminated. What's the meaning in general of terminated? I just want to understand that. Or do you mean that you dealt with 43% level successful rate of organized crime? If I can be clarified. But Jefferson, generally I am just concerned about serious crime. The detection rate, if you go to all the given slides, like 46 moving down, the detection rate seems to be far lower. If maybe the general can give us what is it that is lacking? Is it the skilled detectives that are looking that it doesn't even come to 40% at least? Because when we talk of serious crimes, I believe that we are talking of crimes like murder, which really are of serious concern to our people in most of the areas. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honorable Ramadakani.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. For me, this area, this particular program 3, is a critical program, and it's a program that, in general term, I think General Patan will remember that it has been the one that has been underperforming. Now, it's quite depressing if it's been underperforming. And instead of saying, what are the other things that we need to do from the intelligence part, from the intelligence up to the question of detective and taking the case to court, what is it that we need to do to improve this? Now, even going down and down and down in terms of reduction. I just have a huge problem with it. I'm speaking in general terms here, but if you see the target which is informed by the previous underperformance, underperformance informs the target. Next year, the underperformance will inform the target reduction. Is that what is going to be the order of the day? Chair, want to understand, because if we go down this road, this is a dangerous road that we're taking because of the frustration that you would get with those who complain. And that frustration leads to other things, including people beginning to say that we do we'll solve our things the way we see them fit to solve it in this community. question for me is, General Pasani, with the resources that in your disposal we have, what is it that must be done to check this section up? Because I'm finding it difficult that we would accept the target that are going down this way, which I informed, motivated, informed by what we have achieved the previous year and what we have not achieved the previous year. So Chair, I mean, from where I'm sitting, I'm saying we can go down, including the removal of the indicators, because if you were to build this in coming up with some kind of evidence base, the year on year, you've got to use the same measures. But if you're changing measure from one year to the other in terms of your target, it becomes every year new things coming up. So the question is, what must be done? What is it that we need to do in order to check up this particular program, that we see a better result in terms of the achievement of it? But generally, Jay, I mean, I am depressed. I'm just getting depressed. follow up with the commissioner already. My point I'm making, Korea, detection rate, at some point it talks about the property related and it says 14%. So, is what are we going to achieve in this year? I just think that the management probably should go back to the drawing board on this program and actually sit down and relook at it and come up with at least something that can make South Africans happy, feel good, as the NDP suggests. We want to build a society that is generally happy and feel good. But this I can't feel good. I must be straight about it, so that at least you hear my frustration. How do I explain this in my own constituency? That this is what we have agreed, this is what we have accepted. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Madam. Robert Kahn, Honorable Bishop.
I'm fine.
Yeah, maybe just two other additional issues, maybe to indicate, because on the one hand, if you look at DPCI, they've retained the issue of trial-ready dockets. And trial-ready dockets is, in a certain sense, objective testing. Is there progress? Is the investigation finalized? Is there liaison with the NPA? Now, if we say we're going to put this again in our operational plan in 513, it's not open to public scrutiny. And I think that is the point that members are making. The complaints we get from people, apart from not getting feedback with investigations and all those matters, is the bar must be set higher for this program. I think that is the general thrust. Of course, this is the everyday things that people are confronted with if they are the victim of a burglary or the victim of crime. Is that matter being taken up? Is there, at the end of the day, a conviction? Is there deterrence by that? So I think that is a major issue. I think SAPS must look at again. For instance, and I want to, the removal of because I didn't hear really good arguments why the detection of the trial-ready dockets should be removed as indicator. I haven't heard that today, but maybe after two will hear that. But for instance, the performance indicator for improving investigation, prosecution of criminal and violent conduct in public protest has been removed. Now, in the MTHF target, that was indicated as a priority. And a part of that, the TDI of 2016-17, it was indicated to know, why did you remove that? What was the criteria? Is it difficult to measure? Is the data that you get from your various regions not significant? But again, what is the rationale for removing those targets? Right, members, I think that is the first round. Let's break here for lunch. We'll come back at 2 o'clock, and then we'll continue with the responses. Thank you. 2 o'clock. Thank you, members. Thank you.
Yeah.